Sheeta with that move. Come on, Eddie. Come on, Eddie. Eddie to the top. Oh, Eddie cheated.
Get ready to go inside the ropes like you've never been before and watch the most famous and infamous matches in wrestling history, along with legends of the squared circle. Welcome to the first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Payoff. We are finally here. Welcome to episode number one of The Payoff. This is Tom Healy, and I am joined by my co-host, Jeffrey Ryan. Jeff, how the hell does it feel that we are finally here recording this?
Look at us, Tom, you know, doing a wrestling podcast. Who would have thought? Well, we would have thought, but who would have thought, you know? I'll say this. It's great to finally be recording and to have the opportunity to talk about some great wrestling matches. You know, we've been working for months in preparations for this day so we can bring some five-star content to our listeners. They, you know, they love that. You know, we'll throw some six stars in there too. So I'm really excited today.
Yeah, you know, look, we created this podcast because we wanted a different type of wrestling podcast. We're excited to finally share this with the world and sincerely thank each and every one of you for listening and supporting the show. We are going to do our absolute best every single Monday when a new episode drops to entertain you. The format of each show is going to consist of the same three parts. Part number one is the build. The build's going to be where Jeff and I lay the groundwork for building up to a famous or infamous match so that you have some context on the significance of the match and what was going on in the wrestling business. Part two of each show is the payoff. The payoff is where I will watch the match along with someone. It could be a wrestler, manager, spouse of a wrestler, child of a wrestler, wrestling journalist, wrestling trainer. Hell, every once in a while, it might even be someone that's never watched a wrestling match in their life if we think they're going to entertain you. Following that match is part three. The aftermath. The aftermath is where Jeff and I discuss the match and share what others in the industry thought as well. Plus, we'll talk about what transpired after the match involving the participants. We hope you enjoy the build, the payoff, and the aftermath each week. So before we jump into the build, we quickly want to tell you a little bit about ourselves. I'm a lifelong fan of the business. I've been watching it weekly since I was 4 years old. I've had the opportunity to be a world champion, which took place in my backyard. I've attended a bunch of WrestleManias, and I've had a hell of a time over all these years following the business, and I haven't taken a break from it. As I tell my wife, I don't cheat on you. I don't have a drug or alcohol problem. I treat you well. But I watch wrestling every week, and it's just something you're going to have to live with. Jeff, tell everyone about yourself, buddy.
You know, Tom, like you, I grew up a wrestling fan. You were almost a backyard champ. I was a superstar for a day when we went to the Performance Center, so I don't know who wins that one. But, you know, I've always enjoyed watching and following along. I was thinking about it this week. My earliest wrestling memory would be SummerSlam 1991. Mom probably still has the VHS tape, and I would constantly watch and rewind Mr. Perfect versus Bret Hart. Just a great match. So enjoy that quite a bit. And so, you know, we've got our favorites on the current roster, but I'm excited just to dig into these matches from wrestling past. You know, we've talked to a lot of legends of the industry so far, and some of the tales we're hearing are just fantastic. And, you know, you and me gotten some just, I'll say crazy insight. There's been some fun insight, you know, that you and I have learned along the way too.
Yeah, and speaking of the Performance Center, if we need to bribe our listeners to get a certain amount of subscriptions or followers or ratings, you know, maybe we can tease them with dropping those promos that we delivered at the Performance Center, because we have the video footage.
That's scary stuff right there. I don't know. We'll see what happens there.
A for effort on those, if nothing else. So look, as we were creating this podcast, we came up with a couple simple rules that we thought were important, and we want to share those with you. So rule number one is there's no current product talk. There's zero discussion of the current product. There's plenty of great options out there for people that cover the wrestling business and have podcasts about the wrestling business. We're fans of the current product. We're fans of those journalists and those podcasts, but it's not something we're going to talk about. We want to talk about nostalgia. We want to talk about some of the greatest matches and, like we said, most infamous matches in the history of the business. So on this podcast, we're going to cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of wrestling past. Rule number two, we're going to give you lots of unique and fresh information. We're going to try our damnedest to ask questions of the talent that reveal new information, not the same questions you've heard on 15 other podcasts before. And we want to bring you a wide range of guests, some of whom maybe you've never even heard from before, but they'd be interesting to the super fan, the lapse fan, and maybe even a never a fan of the business. We also want to share where each match stands in history, what was going on at the time, how the match was received, and anything else interesting that gives you context that we can dig up and you'll be entertained by. We call this show The Payoff because every classic storyline comes down to a payoff in the ring, and those are the matches we're going to cover. Rule number three, everyone's going to have fun. We're going to have fun, our guests are going to have fun, and most importantly, you're going to have fun listening. We truly look forward to sharing information about upcoming episodes, listener polls, future stuff, anything else we can think of on our Twitter and Instagram. Both of them are at Payoff Pod. Again, that's at Payoff Pod. So now that we got the business out of the way, let's talk about the build. No Way Out 2004, Eddie Guerrero versus Brock Lesnar, WWE Championship, Cow Palace in Northern California. We have Vicky Guerrero as our special guest, and man, you're going to really enjoy hearing from her.
Excuse me.
You know, she does it a lot better, and just a short little tease, you are going to hear her say it. So,
that's all right.
So look, we had some really interesting episodes to choose from, and Jeff and I went back and forth, and all the ones we considered, you're going to hear from eventually, but we picked this one as our premiere for a few different reasons, and I'll tell you where my mind was, and Jeff can do the same. You know, from my perspective, this is one of those matches where if you had a buddy that had never seen pro wrestling before and you wanted to get him into it and convince him you weren't like crazy for watching this shit, there's a couple matches that you'd maybe put in front of him to be like, hey, I want to show you how this stuff's actually pretty awesome. To me, this is one of those matches, right? This is one of those matches where I would say, hey, sit down, spend a half hour watching this, and tell me if this is actually more interesting than you thought. The reason I love this match is it just had a lot. It had emotion. It had the high stakes. It had David versus Goliath. The crowd was going nuts. There was this real life story of redemption that they cover before the match. So even if someone didn't know all the past, they'd learn a little bit about it. There's just so much to love about this. Then you have Vicky Guerrero giving her perspective on the match, on what was going on TV, as well as in real life with Eddie. And it's just a fascinating perspective that you've probably never heard before in this format. So we just thought that this would be a great way to kick off the payoff and hopefully earn you as a listener on a weekly basis. Jeff, that's my opinion. What'd you think? Why do you think this is a great premiere episode for us?
Yeah, you and I went back and forth. You know, we were trying to find matches that, you know, obviously interested us and we thought would be interesting to people, but, you know, also that had just some significance in the WWE Universe history. You know, we weren't focusing on only main events or, you know, only the Big Four, Big Five pay-per-views, but, you know, rather, how could we hear, you know, the best stories surrounding a match? This is one of those matches. There was just so much happening that we knew there had to be more to the story. So here's what we know about the build. Like I said, there was a lot happening with Eddie. For starters, Eddie was actually coming off of a feud with Chavo and the breaking up of their tag team Los Guerreros. So on the previous pay-per-view Royal Rumble, that was Eddie's big match. He also had some double duty in the lead-up to No Way Out and won the SmackDown Royal Rumble. Now, the Royal Rumble winner that year was Chris Benoit, and he had a storyline playing out that had him chasing the World Heavyweight title on Raw, which gave Eddie this chance for the WWE Championship on SmackDown. Brock was feuding with Goldberg at the time. Eventually, they had a match at WrestleMania 20. Infamous or not, we will talk more about that match at some point. But storytelling at the time allowed Eddie and Brock to become the higher priority match. Brock and Goldberg had some pull-aparts along, but Brock had to go through Eddie first. So, you know, Tom, you and I were talking, you know, before we got started here, you had some thoughts on the build that we were discussing.
Yeah, you laid it out really well. Just a couple of things to add some color to that. If you go back and watch the match, and I'd highly recommend it, obviously, the vignette before this match, it does a really good job of highlighting the build. So it wasn't a long build. This wasn't something that was brewing for months or years. It was a simple build, a couple weeks, as Jeff alluded to with the SmackDown Royal Rumble and Eddie winning it. But the promos that came out of it were just so damn good because they were based in reality. And it was really playing up the fact that Eddie had hit rock bottom in his life. And then if he were to win the title, this would actually be this incredible real life story of redemption. And it brought to me up a simple point, but it's obvious, right? Sometimes you don't need 40 writers crafting some crazy ass storylines with all kinds of wild characters and these big scripted promos. You just need to let these real life stories and then guys create the material. And the same goes for the characters, right? Like, it's okay to just say, hey, just amplify yourself to a 12 and go be yourself, talk about yourself, your real life personality, your real life struggles. So this simple formula is something that I think a lot of times wrestling companies just ignore or overthink. And the basics of great storytelling and what captures an audience is often simple. And that's really what this was. A couple week build based in reality. And as we see, the payoff to this was just incredible. So as we transition over to the payoff portion of the podcast, where I'm about to watch the match with Vicky, you know, let's give you an idea of what happens. Each week, we're going to give you the timestamp or a link or a place that you can access the match if you want to watch along with us. You might be in the car or sitting at your desk or not able to access the match. That's okay. You're still going to enjoy the interview. You're still going to enjoy us talking about the match. And then you can always go back and watch it later if there's some things that interest you. But if you can, it's going to be really interesting for these matches to hit mute, to play the interview at the timestamp we give. And it just adds another element to the match. So for those that want to watch along, go fire up the WWE Network, No Way Out 2004. It's time for the payoff. So again, No Way Out 2004. When we come back from break, it's going to be the very beginning of the match. The entrances have already happened. It's 1 hour, 55 minutes, and 35 seconds on the WWE Network. Again, No Way Out 2004, 1 hour, 55 seconds, 55 minutes, 35 seconds, beginning of the match after the entrance. And when we come back from break, you're going to hear my kick-ass conversation with the one and only Vicky Guerrero while we watch one of just the most awesome matches in the history of professional wrestling. Enjoy. Excuse me, but we are here with the one and only Vicky Guerrero. Vicky, welcome to the show. I said, welcome to the show. Oh, wait, never mind. I get it. Okay.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited for this interview. I'm so excited to have you here. You know, this is going to be fascinating to watch a match of Eddie's, a famous match with you. So, you know, we're looking forward to hearing any stories, thoughts, insights you have about, you know, his career and working with Brock. And, you know, we'll certainly ask you questions, but feel free to share anything. And, you know, I guess my first question is, when's the last time you saw this match?
You know, I see them quite often. I mean, you know, I have a YouTube channel, so I'm always going through YouTube, and the fans are always sending me different clips on my social media. So it's really hard to see how long Eddie has been gone, because, you know, the gift of the internet is that you get to see Eddie every day, you know, and it's so unreal that he's not here, and it's been 16 years, and it's just unbelievable, you know, the gift of the social media to see the, you know, see Eddie and his work, and then just to, you know, enjoy it. So I go through these quite often. So this is really great, and I'm excited to share this with you.
So when did you know that he was going to be winning the title?
I didn't know at all. Wow. And not until Eddie called me that night. You know, there, of course, you know, in the wrestling business, you know, it's scripted and they know the outcome, you know, before they go out. And Eddie had told me, you know, he left for that trip and he was like, I'm not going to call you. You know, I want you to just enjoy it without, you know, worrying about me, because, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of fear. You know, I worked with Brock being in WWE, but not to the capacity of seeing him work with Eddie, you know, because I was the housewife and I was at home. And there was a lot of fear in me for Eddie's, you know, well-being, because Brock is such a massive, you know, wrestler, and the height and the weight, you know, versus Eddie. There was a lot of concern for me, you know, and I think Eddie, the last thing he wanted was for me to show my worry over him that day. So I didn't hear from him all day, which really pissed me off. But I knew he was well. I knew he had a lot to concentrate on, and they had a lot to take care of for that night. But it was just, yeah, I didn't know until he called me. So to watch the match and to see it with my girls, we were fans of Eddie, you know, because we were just rooting for him the whole time.
Well, as you probably remember from this match, everyone was. I mean, this was, you know, you want to show someone about pro wrestling and about, you know, a great match and storytelling and fans being into it. I mean, this is one of the matches you want to share. As you probably remember, at the end of the match, people were going nuts. I mean, it was a testament to how much they loved him and wanted to see him succeed.
Yeah, you know, and Eddie is such a great worker. You know, aside from him being talented, he always wanted to do his best for his opponent. And him and Brock, they dance together so beautifully. You know, I mean, of course, you see him, you know, throwing Eddie around right now, and that was really hard for me to watch. But yeah, Eddie just was in so much control because he loved working with Brock, you know, and it was a challenge for him because this is such a new, you know, the Goliath and David story, you know. So seeing this here just makes me kind of like squint and squeal of seeing how Eddie was being thrown around. But yeah, this is such a great story they told between each other.
Do you remember his reaction when he found out that he was going to be winning the championship? I mean, I obviously, you know, some people say what's just a prop, and for others, it means the world to them. So what did winning the championship mean to Eddie?
It meant the world because at this point in time, you know, Eddie was overcoming his demons, you know, drug abuse and alcoholism. And so with WWE giving him this chance to have, you know, a chance at the title, there were so many things that his whole life was coming to this one point that he's waited for all these years. And he wanted to prove to not only to the fans and to WWE, but to himself that in his heart, this is all where all his work was going to pay off. You know, this was something really special to Eddie because this is his time to prove that, you know, yeah, I did go through my demons and I did lose my family at one point. I did lose my job, but I am here because I worked for it and it means a lot to him. And it was just a lot of emotions into one night.
Well, and some of our listeners may not realize this was after some of those issues. So, you know, not only was he trusted to be the champion and to headline this pay-per-view and then be a prominent part of WrestleMania 20, but this was after many of these challenges. So, I mean, it was, yeah, I guess walk everyone through a few years prior to this when he was out of wrestling. What was that like? I mean, where was he working and how were you feeling at that time?
Probably 4 years before this match, you know, Eddie and I were trying to get divorced. We tried 3 years to be divorced and the good Lord never made it happen. Eddie went through his rehab. He ultimately had gotten fired from WWE and he pretty much had to, you know, go into rehab and to get himself taken care of first before he could even think about his wrestling career. And he even put me and the girls to the side because this was about Eddie. If you want to get well, this was something that Eddie had to do all by himself. And it was a really hard time for our family. And, you know, after Eddie finished rehab and he got into an AA program and he had a sponsor, he slowly but surely got to build his life up again by, you know, we lost our house in Florida. So he got an apartment. I had an apartment. He got to have visitation of the girls. And, you know, he had to prove himself to so many people that he was able to be trusted again. And that he, when he says, you know, I want to be sober, it meant that he was really going to be sober because actions speak louder than words. And so there was a lot of, you know, times that he had to prove to everyone that this is the new person that he wanted to be. And, you know, after he finished, you know, he still, you know, finished his rehab, he started doing independent shows. He started working out again. He started, you know, getting, you know, his baby steps back into, you know, getting into the wrestling industry again. And I think WWE was watching him, you know, they were watching to see how he was going to hold himself up, you know, to working that schedule again and to proving himself to wanting to be back in the ring. And, you know, when WWE called him back to, you know, start working, this was this was the greatest testimony that we had ever thought would happen. And, you know, Eddie had another relationship going on. So I was always happy for him because aside from our differences, Eddie loved wrestling. This was his love and this was where he was good at. And I always wanted him to succeed. And so did the girls. And, you know, to see him fight, you know, going through from going from arenas from, you know, 100,000 people to wrestling in front of 250 was very humbling for Eddie. And it was very difficult because this was not what he was ever wanting to do. You know, once you, you know, hit the big WWE stage, you know, you don't want to go back to the independent, you know, arenas where there's 100 people, maybe 200. So it was very humbling, but it made him fight even more, you know, to get back and to prove himself. And when WWE, you know, asked him to see if he wanted to try this again, you know, he was very humbled and speechless. I mean, we all were because he was getting a second chance in life, you know, so this was just a prayer that he had been asking God for a long time.
One thing you said that I thought was interesting was, you know, he got back to the gym and working out physically. I mean, obviously he's in phenomenal physical shape at this point, but when he was at his lowest point, I mean, physically did he, you know, look differently? Did you see a different person at that point? I mean, how far did he come physically to get back to this point where he's having a world-class match against someone that's, you know, Brock Lesnar?
Yeah, it took a lot of work because, you know, going through his rehab and, you know, getting himself established, you know, living on his own again. And, you know, he lost, of course, his legs were always skinny. We used to call him Boyito legs because they were chicken legs. But he lost his muscle mass and he lost his conditioning. And he knew that he had to, you know, get back in the gym and you know, work to get back into WWE. But having this match presented to him, he was so dedicated. I mean, he was at the gym twice a day. I mean, he was so picky about his food and what he ate. And this was his time, you know, to show, you know, this is what I worked for. And this is why I wanted to come clean in my life because these are the matches that I wanted to be, you know, given from WWE. So he got the chance and he shocked us all, you know, and I was amazed at all the accomplishments that he was doing to get this far.
I mean, you know, going back and looking at the work he did the last few years of his life, I mean, I think you could make a strong argument it was the best work he ever did in his career.
Absolutely. You know, this is where you get a second chance in life. And Eddie told me many times when he was in rehab and he lost, you know, when we're going through our whole bankruptcy and everything, he's like, I've lost everything, you know, and at that time, that's what we really felt. But seeing how he started climbing the ladder and, you know, he started getting stronger little by little. He's like, I think I'm going to do this. Like, I think this is going to work out and I'm going to be able to prove myself again. And, you know, I think once he got his mind clear and he was out of the drugs and the alcohol, his mind became, you know, open again. And his eyes were open and his personality was the funny Eddie again. And he was loving life and, you know, and being the jokester and just, the old Eddie was coming back, you know, so that all had to be done first before he could, you know, focus on his wrestling.
You saw two different sides of him, correct? I mean, there was the good side and the bad side, but tell people what the difference is for those that may have not dealt with something like this. And, you know, in the interest of full transparency, I mean, I was raised by a single mother. My father had alcohol problems. The guy that my mom dated for a long time after that had alcohol problems. So I've seen a lot of this, but maybe for some of those that haven't, you know, tell us how there's, I mean, two different people that you were essentially married to and what that was like.
Sure. You know, me and Eddie were dating and just got married, Eddie is funny. He was a jokester. He was a prankster. He laughed all the time. He loved to go to movies. He was very outgoing, spontaneous. And he was this man that I fell in love with. And when a person becomes involved with addiction or alcoholism, that becomes their first love in front of everything else. And it's almost like I wanted him to have an affair with a woman because at least I could go kick the woman's ass. And with pills and alcohol, you can't. It's something that is beyond me or anyone else to even fight with because it has so much control of this person. And it's such a horrible disease that, you know, for me facing this disease, it was it was horrible because it took everything. It took all of Eddie's distractions into these pills or the drink for the day. And he wasn't there mentally with us. And he wasn't even, you know, he wouldn't remember his days, you know, and that's something that's very heartbreaking because when he was home, me and the girls wanted him home. We wanted to have his mind and his energy and to focus on us. And, you know, his focus was on, you know, the abuse and the alcohol. And that's something that was really terrible for me and the girls to live with.
And so as his partner, is there part of you that says, okay, if he's going to take some pills and wash it down with alcohol, well, I'm going to do the same thing and just put myself out of my misery? Or do you sit there and you see the effect it has on someone and you say, well, I just don't want to look like that. And I have to be there for our daughters. I mean, were you ever conflicted at all? Or was that never something that even crossed your mind?
Of course, being human, you want to just kind of drink and take pills and escape for the, you know, the day of what's going on. But I had two girls to take care of, and I didn't understand the disease at first because you don't understand what's going on until you lose everything. You look back and you're like, oh my gosh, those years that he had been going through, it was just an accumulation of what was happening now. And you don't realize that because when you're living every day, you take the good with the bad, you know. So if I had a good day with him, it was great. And if it was a bad day, you learned how to get through it and just, you know, keep going and get the girls, you know, taken care of. So it's horrible, you know, because you no one knows how to cope with this disease until you get help. And so I was also in my own disease because I was a co-enabler where, you know, I helped Eddie pack. I helped Eddie, you know, answer the phone. I did all his scheduling. I took him to the airport. Back in those days, you could walk someone into the plane, you know, and just put them in the seat. And I did that. You know, I was making sure Eddie made it to the seat. He was, you know, buckled in and he was asleep. And I knew, okay, he's going to make it to his destination. And, you know, those were the days where I thought, oh, I can control this. I'm good. I can take care of him. And it just comes to the point where, you know, it's out of my control where he's taking more than I know that he is. And, you know, he's drinking a lot more. And when he's on the road, you know, thank God he had great friends that, you know, they kind of took care of each other. So that was not a worry of mine. But, you know, when he comes home, the disease is still there and he's still bringing it home with him.
Who were some of his friends that, you know, you knew you could trust to look out for him? I mean, obviously he had an incredible reputation. People were devastated by losing him. Who were some of the people that really you thought were looking out for him and trying to do their best to keep him focused and employed?
His friends were never, you can never blame anyone else except Eddie for what he wanted to do. And, you know, his friends were, you know, you had Chris Benoit, who I love him and I miss him every day. Chris was a damn good friend to Eddie. I mean, they were like brothers. You know, there's Dean Malenko, you know, Chris Jericho, you know, he had, you know, Chavo Guerrero, his nephew. These were all guys that he truly loved their company, you know, and I'm not saying his days were always, you know, a drunk fest or a pill fest. You know, Eddie suffered in his disease alone. So I think, you know, I know that he would go to dinner, have a great time with everyone. And then he went to his room and it was a party for him, you know, just to sleep and just to get through his injuries. You know, I know Eddie was in a lot of pain, you know, so doctors and, you know, just kind of escalated that whole problem, you know, of, oh, here's, you know, 150, you know, OxyContin, you know, come back next month when you need some more. And back then there wasn't any accountability for physicians of how much, you know, they were giving, you know, the guys or prescribing. And that was a lot of the fault of the physician too. It's not, you know, the addict is only looking for the help when the physician's doing his job in helping that addiction. You know, you can't, there's a lot of people to blame in this whole disease, you know, but he had some really good friends. He had a lot of good friends in El Paso in Florida, you know, that were just angels for me, you know, and they took a lot of burden for me and they kind of helped me, you know, take him, you know, pick him up somewhere or bring him home. And, you know, so there was a village that helped me, you know, but at the same time, you know, you can't blame those people because Eddie was the only one that could make the last decision.
You know, someone you mentioned in there was Chris Benoit, and tell the listeners how much Nancy meant to you and what she did for you, you know, in the days, weeks, and months after Eddie's passing.
Oh my gosh. I miss Nancy every day. She was a big pinnacle of when Eddie passed away. Her and Chris were family to us, you know, with their son, Daniel, just it was every time they had the chance to come to Florida, you know, they stayed with us. We did concerts together. We did a lot of family outings together, and I love them and I miss them. They were really good for Eddie because, you know, they were all in the business, and Nancy taught me a lot about the business, you know, how to be strong, how to, you know, keep myself busy when Eddie's gone for 2 or 3 months. And my girls love Nancy because she would give them all of her evening gowns and costume jewelry. So they thought Nancy was like this princess that, you know, was just amazing to come, you know, sit down and play with them, you know, dress up and princess and dolls. But, you know, when Eddie passed away, Nancy stayed with me about a month after. And she helped me so much because I just slept all day and she got the girls ready. She would dress them. She would get me out of bed. She would make me shower. She said, "We're going to lunch." I'm like, "I don't want to. We're going to lunch." And she would pack everybody in the truck and we'd all go to lunch. And she helped me get that fresh air, you know, and kind of get out of my head. And man, I was so tormented when, you know, they all passed away, and it just seemed unreal. But we don't know what happened that day. I don't understand. And we only know that, you know, God knows the real, you know, truth behind it. But yeah, I miss them every day, regardless of what he did. You know, he loved us.
Well, and I think, you know, a lot of times in life, it's important to just judge people based on the way they treated you. And it sounds like they treated both you and Eddie extremely well. Yeah. How special of a moment was it a month after this when WrestleMania 20 ended with Eddie and Chris in the ring? What did that mean to him?
Oh, that was a great time. That was a fun night because...
Were you there?
Yes, it's the brotherhood coming together and celebrating those special moments, and to have Nancy next to me and the kids and watching our husbands, you know, celebrate and make, you know, these memories of, especially during WrestleMania, that was what our family love was all about, you know, was being there to share everything. And, you know, it's just it's a special family, you know, and a special love that we share, that these guys work hard all the time, you know, to work for these special moments. And these are memories that are just heartbreaking, but at the same time, they're always in my heart, you know, to remember.
Well, it's, you know, as we're watching this match here, a couple of things that stick out to me, you know, we're a third of the way, half the way through the match, and throughout, you've seen the fans. I mean, they're glued to it. They're you know, buying into all the false finishes. You know, Eddie was at one point Adam in a submission, and they're up and hoping it was going to, you know, Brock was going to tap out, you know, 10 minutes into the match. But, you know, to me, as we see Brock, I mean, he's selling, he's taking a bunch of bumps. I mean, does that to you say, you know, he respected Eddie for him to really try to make Eddie look like $1 million here?
Yeah, you know, Brock could have easily just, you know, outjobbed him and just, like, you know, won the whole thing, you know, in 5 minutes. They really wanted to tell a story, and they just, Brock was just, gave his 115%, you know, and Eddie, it went back and forth. And, you know, the way I see Brock, you know, like, throwing Eddie around, you know, the girls were like petrified when we were watching this. But, you know, you see the love for each other that they have, and just that they wanted to make this match count. And I love watching the fans. I mean, the fans' faces, you know, when they thought Eddie was going to win, and then, you know, he taps out, and it's pretty spectacular watching this. You know, I haven't seen the whole length of this match, but this is really pretty special. And Brock is just amazing. You know, I talked to Brock after we started working together in WWE, and he loved Eddie. He just, like, he'll always just hug me and say, you know, I still miss Eddie every day. And that's something that's really special when I see Brock, when I get to see him every now and then.
You know, if there are bad things out there about Eddie from the wrestlers, I follow this stuff pretty closely. I listen to a lot of podcasts, do a lot of reading. I haven't heard much. I mean, it's just, he's just one of those, you know, I might even make the comparison of like an Owen Hart, where people just love the guy, and he brought a smile to everyone's face.
You know, and that's something, Tom, that really surprised me, that Eddie would just have such a battle with the pills and drinking. But when he was in the locker room, he always looked to the next guy to see, hey, you know, can I sit down and talk to you? Like, what's bothering you? He wanted everyone around him to be okay. Even though he was in his, you know, black hole, and he was suffering with his injuries and whatever it is that he was going through that day, he cared about everyone in that locker room. And whether it was throwing a joke at someone or getting his Bible out and giving them a scripture to help them, that was the guy in the locker room. And it was just amazing how he just fought within himself on so many things, but he still wanted everyone around him to be good. And that's just a big testimony, you know, today that I still talk about.
So Vince McMahon obviously trusted Eddie at this point in his life after some of the challenges to make him a very prominent part of the product. What did Vince mean to your family? What did he mean to Eddie at this time? How did he help Eddie? Because again, I think a lot of people, especially casual fans, they see the character, they maybe hear some negative things. Tell us really about Vince McMahon, the person, and what he meant to you and your family.
Oh, Vince, I love Vince. He's like a dad to me. Vince and Eddie had a very special relationship where, you know, Eddie would go visit Vince in Connecticut, and it was, whether it was a meeting, which they say was a meeting, but I think they were both goofing off and playing golf or whatever it was they were doing. Because when Eddie said, oh, I'm going for a meeting, I'm like, yeah, sure, you're going to go play around and have fun with them. You know, but Vince gave him that second chance, and I think Vince respects the guy so much that, you know, he knows everyone deserves a second chance. This business is hard. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, you're away from your family, you know, and you're with the second family more than you are with your kids and your wife. And, you know, you live for this business, you know, 6 days out of the week. And I think Vince saw that, you know, Eddie really loved it and he wanted to be back again. And for Vince to have that, you know, voice for him saying, yeah, I want you back. I think a lot of people didn't believe that it would happen, but I think Vince was the main, you know, person that made that happen. And I've always been grateful to Vince, and he's very special to me, and he loves the girls. And he showed that when Eddie passed away, you know, how Vince just called me and said, what do you need? You know, what is it that I can do to help you? And I was in shock. You know, I mean, I couldn't believe, you know, how Vince's love for Eddie was so abundant, you know. And just talking to Vince today, you know, I mean, and seeing him, you can tell by their hugs and their eyes, you know, that he goes, I miss Eddie every day. And I think for Vince, you know, giving me the trust in WWE, that was saying, you know, hey, you know, I love Eddie too, you know, and I want to do this for you. And I think Eddie's legacy and his life just was a testimony for me to be able to, you know, carry that love for Eddie, you know, in the WWE.
What's something that the listeners would be surprised about Vince McMahon? I mean, what's something that just, I mean, you were around him for over a decade. What's just something that would surprise people?
He's lovable. He's such a great, gentle giant, and he loves to laugh. He smiles when he talks to me. And I think fans see, you know, the Vince McMahon that comes out with the crazy walk, and, you know, he's, of course, he's a heel and he's a manipulator for the fans during the show. But behind the scenes, you know, Vince always just liked to sit down and talk and say, how are the girls? You know, or he'd make his way to just, you know, give me a hug, you know, and say, hey, Guerrero, how's it going today? You know, and that's, and I got a lot of flack for that, for people watching this, but I never made excuses for it, because what I had with Vince was very special, and I will never take that for granted to this day.
Well, how impressive is this? Three suplexes to Brock Lesnar. I mean, Eddie was a little stronger than you might think.
Yeah, I was so proud of him. I was like, oh, please just follow through. Brock is a lot of dead weight.
Yeah, no kidding. On a lighter note, tell us, how did you meet Eddie, and what was that courtship like?
I met Eddie on a blind date. My girlfriend knew his best friend, and she said, hey, you know, I know this guy who has a friend who's single. And I said, well, I want to be on a blind date, because let's go to a club. So if I don't like him, I can go drink with the next guy and go dance with someone else. And it all is good. You know, when I went to, the backstory of this is that I went to school in a country school, and it's all cowboy, short hair, very clean cut. And when I met Eddie at the club, he had the long hair that went past his shoulders, tight jeans, cowboy boots, and just muscular. And I was like, and my friend's like, well, are we leaving? And I'm like, oh, hell no, we're not leaving. I'm going to stick with this guy. And we danced the rest of the night, and I broke curfew. I was supposed to be home at 1. I didn't get home till 4 because we danced till 3. And back then, I lived like an hour away, and my dad was waiting for me at the front door. And I was like, Dad, punish me how you want. I just met the greatest guy. He was like baffled. Because you're not mad. I'm like, I don't care what my punishment is. I met the cutest guy ever tonight. And we started dating ever since. So, I mean, it was history after that.
So how do you characterize, for those that can't even imagine. What's it like to be a wrestler's wife? And I mean, I think of, you know, Japan, Mexico, you know, even more so than just when he worked in the States. But what was it like? I mean, was it stop, start, 6 weeks gone, 4 weeks back? I mean, what is living like that like, especially with two young daughters?
You know, as a wrestler's wife, you live with a calendar. And you circle the days that they're home and you X the days that they're gone. And when they're home 2 or 3 days, you want to cram everything you got for that month into those 2 or 3 days. So, you know, our husbands could enjoy those family moments. Oh my gosh.
Look at the fans. I mean, they're going nuts. And this is one of the best finishes. I mean, from this point forward, it's phenomenal.
And to see Goldberg back, you know, in WWE, I'm just like, it brings back memories, you know, how he ran in. So that was, I love watching Goldberg. And
when this was a wild time too, because remember that was a month later, they both left. Goldberg didn't renew his contract. Lesnar went off to play football. And then it was this, I mean, it really was this passing of the guard, because then WrestleMania ends with Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit. You know, you would have never thought. It was just a wild time in the business.
Yeah. You know, and then you see the ref out, you're just like, okay, yeah, this is not looking good. I'm like, you know, then I'm just yelling like, get up, Eddie, come on, do this. And the suspense, and with Eddie, you know, you start seeing him move, and look at all the signs and the love for Eddie. Like, this is just insane. And, you know, his mom and his brother Mondo are in the audience, you know, during this match, because I stayed home with the girls. And I just wanted to see her expression, because she was so excited about being there.
I mean, they're going nuts, and the timing's perfect. It's like it wasn't too short. It was just perfect. I mean, they're all on the edge of their seat. San Francisco is just a crazy market for him. What was that?
You know, it's the Latinos. It's the love. And look at this. Look at his expression. Eddie's timing was impeccable. I mean, he would listen to the crowd, and he knew when to wait. He knew when to, you know, go for it. He knew how to play with them. And he didn't care about the clock. He didn't care about their time or how much time they had left. He always said, I'm going to wait for the fans and wait till that moment's right. And then I'm going to feed it, you know, to the fans. And to see, I love this part here. See that face? Yeah. I used to see those faces a lot at home. This is just amazing. I just need the ref to get up. So
tell us, as a performer, it's not, this stuff may look easy, but it's not, right? I mean, he has the timing, the facial reactions. There's a million things going on. He's making it look a lot easier than it probably was, right?
Oh yeah, it hurts. Those hits hurt. There's nothing good about this at all. You know, with me performing, you know, I was a general manager, so I got to speak on the microphone and tell people what to do, and I get to walk back to the locker room, and I was done.
But look at this. Look at this. I mean, they're going nuts.
And it was far. He had to jump so far to get to
Oh, yeah. That was one of the best ones. I love this.
Amazing. Amazing.
And obviously, we appreciated how good the frog splash was at the time. But you know how you know it's a really good one is when you see the guys now try and do it. And it's just, it's terrible. Oh, they shouldn't even bother. It looks so bad. So you just, you know, I mean, this is just... Yeah, I mean, was this just all impromptu? I mean, did he just, yeah. I mean, he just runs out in the crowd. The security guard's pulling him off.
Yeah, he was so excited. There's Jimmy Noonan, the security guard. He was going to enjoy his moment, you know, and he didn't care, you know, how much time. He was like, I wanted to celebrate. And he's trying to find his mom. That's where he was trying to, like, make eye contact with her, because he was worried about her and the fans, you know, because the fans already knew that she was sitting there. But there he goes. Yeah. Oh, there she is. And she lost her glass lens. See?
Oh my God.
You hugged her so hard that her glasses were falling apart.
And what was your relationship like with her? She meant a lot to you, right?
Oh, love her. Love her. She was my rock when I was married with Eddie. She was a wrestler's wife too. And she had all the boys that were in the business. And she sat with me many nights, you know, when I cried, because I just had Shaw. I was by myself. And she would sit there and she's like, you know, these are the nights you have to be strong and, you know, take care of the kids and keep the house, you know, running while he's on the road making money for y'all. And she taught me so much about patience and endurance and trust and loving the business and loving our husbands, that they have to be a way to do what they're going to do, you know, to escalate in their career. So she taught me a lot of lessons, you know, during that time. This is awesome. Oh,
You know, complete side note, but as I was watching this match the other day, getting ready for this, it was probably the best call that I've ever heard Michael Cole do as well. I mean, it was phenomenal.
Yeah. You know, I think everyone doubted, you know, that he was going to pull this off, you know, because Brock is tough. I mean, you know, we've known that Brock can hurt people and, you know, he doesn't actually do what he's told. You know, with him, you know, with the respect that he had for Eddie, really showed that they were there for each other, you know. And these days it's not about winning, it's about what you can do for the other guy, you know, because then that guy will shine more. Oh, I'm going to cry. Oh, this is where everything counts.
How did the girls feel when they saw him win?
Oh, they were jumping up and down. They wanted to call him. I'm like, he's not on his phone right now. He's still on stage. But they were really proud of him. They knew that. They were worried because of Brock, you know, and his size and how big he was. And the girls kept saying, you know, Dad, you can just stay home. You don't have to go wrestle him. You know, we still love you without a belt. You know, they always supported him so much. But they were just, we were jumping up and down. And, you know, just I didn't expect to hear from Eddie for a while, but they had him call me. And that was a great surprise.
That's fantastic. And I'd say, you know, if it's not Brock's best match of his career, it's definitely one of the best. I'd say, especially given the fact it was half hour and the way that he sold and the emotions. I mean, you'll never see another Brock match like that again. He's just a different performer, different character at this point. But at that point, that was absolutely phenomenal. You must have been very proud.
I was very proud of not only Eddie, but Brock, and that they were both safe, you know, because there's a lot that runs through your mind. I still think Brock to this day, you know, when I see him, because that's, you know, it was because of him that Eddie was able to have that great match, you know, and they were like dancing in the ring, you know, and doing their own dance. And it was spectacular. Never forgotten.
Well, it was a pleasure watching it with you. We certainly appreciate you being here, and thank you so much. This was fantastic.
This is the best. Thank you.
You're welcome. Wow. What an awesome experience it was listening to Vicky as we watched that match together. She was absolutely phenomenal. So this portion of the show now is the aftermath. We're going to discuss our thoughts on the match, thoughts that others in the industry had, what the storylines did afterwards, and how they shook out. So, Jeff, kick us off with the aftermath.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I forgot how long this match was. It's crazy to think that these guys went 30 minutes just battling each other. You know, we all think of Brock as the beast now, and he's usually just sending guys to Suplex City without issue. But he has some real technical skills that he showed off here, and I really enjoyed that. You know, the last second near fall kickout is a thing of beauty to me. I'll always mark out over that. I don't think Brock could have had any closer of a three than he was after that spear from Goldberg. The payoff and the pop from the crowd when Eddie finally did get the 1-2-3 was better because of that little bit of payoff that got us there.
Yeah, and you know, and even to this day, Lesnar, he has some of the best 2 9/10 kickouts of any wrestler. And yep, that false finish was phenomenal. Yeah, you brought up another interesting point, which is, I mean, yeah, Brock was a big-ass guy. He still looked the same. But in a lot of ways, he was a different performer. Remember, he didn't have the Heyman mouthpiece at that point. So he was cutting some of his own promos. He was wrestling a different style. I mean, it was really interesting watching him back then. Look, I think he's awesome now. I think he was awesome back then, but it was just different. I thought that was really cool. So that was one of my big takeaways. You know, another thing too is that crowd was like absurdly hot. I mean, they loved Eddie.
Yeah, they were going nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think that adds a ton to it. And again, I said it when we were talking about the build to this match, but sometimes the best storylines in wrestling are just these legitimate, basic, simple ones. You had a big guy and you had a small guy. You had a story of redemption from being down and out. It's not complicated, but it's so damn powerful when it's done right. You know, another thing too, when Goldberg came in, that crowd was really hot for him, and they were super into that Goldberg-Lesnar program. And, you know, not long after that, Steve Austin gets in the mix as the guest referee. So you're thinking, this is going to be like this colossal matchup, Madison Square Garden, WrestleMania 20, New York City, and then the crowd shit all over it because they knew both guys were out the door. So it was really interesting how you're watching this match thinking, wow, they got this new champion. Plus, then they've got this build to this huge matchup at WrestleMania 20. And then, you know, I hope we have a chance to cover that on a future episode, but it did not work out the way they intended and you would have thought at this point. So, Jeff, tell us how the match was received by Wade Keller and the Torch.
Yeah, I'll just kind of read it for you. You know, Keller said Brock dominated early and then Guerrero made a big comeback. At 5 minutes 30, they settled into mat holds for several minutes with a few hot moves mixed in, including a great stiff clothesline by Brock that they showed in slow motion. Guerrero turned a throat grab by Brock into a UFC style reversal into a knee bar and then an STF. Great sequence at 12 minutes 30. They went back to mat holds for a while with the crowd totally into everything. Brock bled from his nose. Guerrero made a big comeback at 24 minutes even. Guerrero did three unreleased vertical suplexes. When the ref went down during a Brock F5 attempt, Brock got the title belt. Goldberg ran out and gave Brock a spear, then left. 2 minutes later, Brock came back with an F5 attempt. Eddie escaped and DDT'd Brock and hit a frog splash for the three count. Excellent match, 4.5 stars. And so, you know, we've been trying to see what fans thought and been exploring and using Grapple, the Grapple app here on the Payoff. It takes an average score of fan rankings, and they had this match at a 4.51 stars based on 17 rankings.
You know, I can't disagree with what Keller said, and I don't disagree with the Grapple rankings either. I think both were spot on. Jeff, as you know, we certainly do things a little bit differently here at the Payoff, though. And as we discuss each match, Jeff and I are going to give our rankings on the Payoff. Okay, so we're going to actually give you what we thought of the Payoff, and we're going to ask you to do the same. We want to incorporate the storyline, the build, the crowd, really, and whatever else we feel is important to the result of the match we're covering and ultimately the payoff of that. So Jeff and I are both going to rank the Payoff on a scale 1 to 10 each week, and then we're going to have you do the same on our social media. And the beauty of this is that everyone's going to have different criteria. Everyone's going to judge things by different things, and that's perfectly fine. There is no right or wrong. So now that we've explained it, let me give you my thoughts. A couple things here. You know, I forgot how good Eddie's facial reactions were. That lie, cheat, steal thing and his timing, whether it was serious or it was some of the comical stuff, I mean, it was better than almost anyone in the history of the business. And I think he could have had a future in acting. And it's actually something that Vicky's alluded to in past interviews. And I think she mentioned to me at some point as well. It's also interesting watching these matches on mute. It's really fun to watch the crowd reaction, right? And, you know, are they sitting or are they standing? How much are they moving? How are they reacting to the false finishes and then the finishes? And man, did the crowd eat this up. And I thought it added so much to the match. And really in any big match, it just changes the match, good or bad, based on how they react. So I thought it added a lot to the match. The fans were just going nuts, especially for the finish. So my ranking on the Payoff on a scale 1 to 10 for this match is an 8.5. And that to me means it was pretty damn awesome. If I have to nitpick a little bit, you know, look, it was an incredible match, incredible finish, really enjoyable. I will say, though, that the only thing that really I thought this was missing, and maybe I would have ranked it a little bit higher, was that the build was only a few weeks long, right? So it wasn't this massive build. It wasn't this big rivalry. There wasn't a lot of time for anticipation to build. It was kind of done pretty quickly. So I think that if there was a longer build, that might have helped me think the Payoff was more significant and ranked it closer to a 10. I also think that if it took place on a bigger stage, it might have been a little bit bigger of a payoff. For instance, you know, the next pay-per-view, which was WrestleMania 20 inside Madison Square Garden. So I think a little bit more build, doing this on a little bit bigger of a stage, and man, it might have been a 10. But again, I'm nitpicking. This was absolutely fantastic and an awesome payoff. What do you say, Jeff?
Look at you. 8.5. Going big. I'll get out of the way. Just say I scored it an 8.
Ooh.
The payoff here was great, but me personally, I'm a fan of a longer build. You know, a different time, especially back then, we would see a lot longer builds to matches. It's just not as common anymore. But with that being said, and you know, you said it a little bit, you know, it was a hot build. Maybe that was necessary just with everyone that was involved, and even more so just Eddie individually. I might have gone a little bit higher with Les Goldberg. That's me personally, but the spear was good. It led to the near fall, so I'm going to be locked in at an 8. Goldberg's okay. I like the guy. So, you know, rewatching this match, it's clear why Eddie has been such an inspiration for so many wrestlers, though. You hear it all the time in all the promotions, the guys and women that are coming up. Eddie was the guy, technical wrestling, high flying, who could forget like the fake belt spots, just his ring presence and putting on a great match. It was second nature to him. It was just absolutely fantastic, you know, seeing that stuff. And so 8 for me, I think that's just a solid score. And so we encourage all of our listeners, you know, let us know on Twitter at Payoff Pod. What did you think of the payoff? You know, 1 to 10, give us a number, give us your thoughts. We want to hear from you. Focusing on that aftermath of this match, both Lesnar and Guerrero would go on to have high profile matches at the next pay-per-view, which WrestleMania 20, we've been referencing it quite a bit here. So Eddie would go on to WrestleMania and successfully defend the title against You Suck, Kurt Angle. And so, you know, had his momentum clearly going into this match, and it continued following the big win after Brock. Lesnar, though, as we kind of alluded to a little bit here, he wrestled at WrestleMania 20 and then was gone. You know, he left for the NFL. You know, the story goes that he let the locker room know before a SmackDown taping on March 9th, and that the finish of the match at WrestleMania 20 was actually changed with Lesnar losing by pinfall because he was gone. You know, we got this rematch again recently, but, you know, the former was one that it really fans still haven't forgotten that one. And that match is just one that it will forever live in history between those two, especially if you know the backstory behind it. So, you know, Tom, your thoughts?
Yeah, why do I have a sneaking suspicion that Lesnar nor Goldberg will ever sit down to watch that WrestleMania 20 match with us? But hey, we can dream. We do have some upcoming episodes that people would probably not expect us to discuss with one of the performers.
Never say never. You know they might be willing to. They're still out there. You never know.
Never say never in the wrestling business, and never say never with the payoff. So right. You know, as you were talking, a couple other things came to mind. First of all, so this is 2004, right? 15 years later, Lesnar's still a major star. He debuted in 2002. So it's, you know, you think of Lesnar as this guy, it's like, oh, part-timer, he came and went, this and that. The dude's going to have over a 2-decade run on top of the business. He was on top from the day he came in. He's going to be on top to the day he leaves. It's going to be 20 years in the wrestling business on top. That's insane. So I think that a lot of times we just forget that. I certainly do. The other thing that, you know, as we've been talking here today and really been thinking a lot about Eddie's career, man, we missed out on just some like major matches with him on a big stage. You know, I think about, and I think there was a rumor at one point of like a match with him and Bret Hart at a WrestleMania. I want to say it was 21, but I can't remember. There was, you know, some discussion of that at one point. You know, I mean, imagine him versus like Austin in his prime. Imagine him and Shawn again. They may have squared off at some point, but you know, those guys, major stage, major matches. I can't even imagine. So, you know, again, we talked about WrestleMania 20. I'm sure we're going to cover some different matches from that on a future episode. But it was interesting because it was a big anniversary show, Madison Square Garden. You know, as a fan, I remember thinking, well, there's probably going to be a lot of nostalgia, right? Like, they're going to bring back Hogan. They're going to bring back all these guys. And really, Vince had a much different vision for it. The tagline for the show of WrestleMania 20 was, "It all begins again." And you really can't argue that Vince didn't deliver on that vision. You know, both heavyweight championship matches, both were excellent, by the way, had fresh faces going over in Guerrero and Benoit. And then, you know, of course, that Lesnar match, you know, going into No Way Out, we didn't know if Eddie was ever going to be a world champion, right? And then here we are less than 2 months later in WrestleMania 20, at the time, arguably one of, if not the biggest WrestleManias, center of New York City, Madison Square Garden, and the show's ending with Eddie and his best friend with confetti dropping down and them both holding world champions. So this stretch, I mean, it's just, it's improbable. We didn't see it coming. You know, Eddie obviously was down and out, literally out of wrestling, or certainly out of the WWE. And then here we are not that long later. So it's just a this match really propelled something interesting happening and something major happening, both personally and professionally for him, that we thought we would never see. So, you know, as we wrap up here, Jeff, what are some final thoughts on your mind?
Yeah, we should do this again. This was good stuff, you know, deep diving into some of these matches. You know, we learned a lot going back, and not just you and me. You know, I'm excited to share this with people that tune in and listen in. We have the opportunity to, you know, give back in this way of just kind of, you know, taking a match, looking into it, getting those other stories. And I think that that's something that just everybody can get behind that. You know, we're all wrestling fans. We all mark out for different reasons, but hearing that insight from people that were there or, you know, just know a little bit more, it's great stuff.
Yeah. And look, we're fans. So all that we're really trying to do is create some different, unique, fresh content that we would enjoy the hell out of. And so if we can do that, our thinking here is that there's going to be other wrestling fans out there that are going to enjoy it and follow along for the ride. So we're having an absolute blast mapping this out, lining up interviews with some awesome guests, doing the research, keep working on the format of the show. We're working really hard at this and we're enjoying it. Ultimately, we want you to enjoy it too. We'll commit that we're going to bust our ass on this every week. We're going to get the best guests we can. We're going to try to choose the best and most interesting matches possible with those guests. We're going to ask them the best questions we can and ultimately try to give you the best and most enjoyable episode we possibly can. And, you know, if we're doing that and we're delivering on that, the only thing we ask of you is give us a follow on Instagram and Twitter at Payoff Pod. It's Instagram and Twitter at Payoff Pod. Hit the subscribe button on your podcast app. Give us 5 stars and then sit back, relax, and enjoy the show every week. So with that being said, Jeff, episode 1, man, it's officially in the history books.
Number 1, here we go.
So everyone listening, thank you, thank you, thank you for supporting the show. And thank you for listening to The Payoff.